All right, everybody, welcome back. We're at the 60th Annual Starbirds Custom Car and Auto Show here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And, of course, I'm good here with my buddy Lathan McKay.
McKay, co-founder
of the great Evel Knievel Museum and just overall killer dude that we've been hanging out for a while now since California. And you brought a great guest with us today from Tulsa, the great and honorary Tony Holden. So welcome to the show, man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I've never thought I'd get an opportunity to actually sit and talk with you, man. This is an honor and a privilege, I mean, for everything, I guess, famous boxing promoter. I mean, what are you, your accolades are boxing promoter. That's how it all started, right?
Pretty much, yes.
Pretty much. I mean, some of the famous names. I mean, I know them all, but
I did Tommy Morrison's career. That was on Rocky V.
Yeah, that was the machine gun, right?
Tommy Gun. I did Prince Nassim Hamed, and when he fought Marc Antonio Barrera in Vegas, the biggest fight of the decade. Johnny Tapia, Joe Macy. I've had several world champions.
Yeah, you've done that. Is great. And obviously, we were just talking before we started. So you live here in Tulsa, but you hang out and you go across the world to Bali.
I just got back from Bali. I've been there 3 times in the last year.
40 hours in an airplane?
40 hours. It's not fun.
But it's worth it.
It's worth it. And you get there, it's great.
Gotcha.
And so, he gets harassed by Sylvester Stallone weekly by phone and Frank.
Do you really?
I talk to Frank about once a week,
Do you really?
Uh-huh.
That's great.
Frank Stallone's friend of mine. They I own the Mickey Mantle Childhood Home.
Oh, really?
In Commerce, Oklahoma. And they shot a scene for the Tulsa King, Sylvester's.
I was just
going to
ask you about that because I watched it and I'm like,
wait, that scene was cut?
It was cut. Sylvester was pissed because
really?
That was his baby. He wanted to go to the Mantle House. So we spent the whole day there.
What did they use it for?
Yeah.
Production wise, was it like a location for him?
No. What it was in his character, he was a huge Mickey Mantle fan.
Gotcha.
The Tulsa King, he wanted to go to the Tulsa. To his home. So it was locked, and it shows these guys jimmying the lock and breaking in.
Oh, wow.
Really? And they cut it out of it?
They cut it out.
I was going to say, because I didn't see that part, because the funny part, when I got here, I loved Tulsa King. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And we watched it all, and I was on the way down with my crew, and I was talking to the kids back home, my girl, and she goes, are you going to go by that big statue you always talk about in Tulsa King in a closing with the big dude, you know, the big older dude? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go find it. And all of a sudden, we come around.
It's
the
right
corner.
There, bro.
I pulled around the corner with all my trailers. And I'm like, holy shit, it's right there. And so I was all excited. So that's so cool, man. It was right there.
Yeah.
And so that's great. So, that's cool that you're part of Tulsa King and all that stuff. So how did you, between all that stuff, how did you guys get hooked up? You and
Stallone?
No, I mean you.
Lathan and I. it's bizarre because I knew Evel.
Yeah.
And became friends with Evel. And when he passed, I started collecting Evel everything. I had a guy full time finding everything. I mean, I owned the semi, I owned the super van, I owned crash helmets. And then this guy named Lathan called me. And I'm like, yeah.
Lathan's called me.
Whatever. You know, I didn't take
whatever.
It serious. So he goes, and I had a museum. I started a motorcycle collection. I had a 4-car garage and I just blew it out and ended up having this museum. And my wife walked in there one day and said, who owns all these motorcycles? But anyway, I started putting Evel stuff in there. And I had, at one point, I was the largest collector until this man came around. And he called me, and I didn't really
take
it
serious.
Somebody's
always got to be better, don't you?
Yeah, it was like, I came to see you in 2013, I think. Yeah, I was on the first tour of displaying it at motorcycle events.
I didn't take him serious. And, so I talked to him on the phone. He came by and he met me, and I'm like, okay, maybe this guy. And then the second time he came into my place, he had a van and
trailer.
He came walking in there with the Wembley helmet, with this helmet, with Evel leathers. And I'm going, what the hell?
Who is this guy?
Who is this guy?
That's what I said when I first met him, too. I'm like,
if it wasn't for this man, all this memorabilia would be still scattered everywhere. This man went in and put it all together. The museum wouldn't be here because of him. The truck would not be. He's just done so much.
Yeah, my partner, Mike Patterson, I couldn't have done it without him either. Yeah. It was weighing me down. But
when
Tony was kind of the forerunner, godfather of what became
everything.
Yeah, because Crystal talked about you all the time.
Yeah.
Crystal's Evel's widow. She's one of my best friends. And she's one of Tony's really good friends. And I called her and said, I'm going to go see this guy. And she goes, oh, he's great.
That is so cool.
So great. So that's how I met him. And
you know, when I first went to California, when this all came to I guess, fruition of the tour and all the stuff that we were going to do. And, you know, we joke about it now, like, you know, what, who he was and how he got kind of introduced to me, you know. And I didn't really know who he was when he was in California sitting on a chair. And I'm like, and he's like, yeah, he's from the museum. Or he takes care of the museum. Was it a third party told me. And I'm like, what do you mean? He like sweeps the floor or what? And I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't really pay attention.
No, I mostly produce movies and TV and documentaries.
Austin
got a huge background.
Austin, my film guy. And I go in and I walked in there because I was taking care of everybody, you know, because it's our, you know, company and stuff like that. And I'm like, I just kept looking at him and I'm like, there's way more to that dude than that. And
yeah,
I started looking
at the museum. It was cool. None of us really have a title, I would say, because we'll all do anything.
Yeah.
Everybody there just chips in and does whatever they can. It's kind of a team thing. So,
yeah. And I think that's the best part that I liked about him. And we've been communicating ever since then. And he's just like a book of knowledge. It's just like, oh my God. Like, and the best part about with anybody with networking, he's willing to share it with anybody. And that's what we are. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, you need to call this guy. You need to call that guy. You need to call this guy.
I've met most incredible people through this journey.
Hey, we're on it. Yeah, I know what's happening.
Oh. Hey.
He just comes right in here. So I knew he was gonna do it, and he goes through. This is totally inaccurate, but you know he goes through. Look at it. So everybody, this is our good. Well, now you might as well introduce. So this is our good friend Rob Mariucci.
Yeah. Marinucci.
Marinucci. John Abucci.
Mania. This is my good friend Lathan McKay from the Evil King Evil Museum.
That hurt.
This is Big Bad Mike from Motor Mania. This is Tony.
Big Bad Mike. I'm gonna die.
There and this Rob. There's the door.
Big Bad John.
All right, get out of here.
Big Bad John.
Yeah.
From Motor Mania.
You're gonna
media. Motor Mania Media.
We'll have a podcast in a little while, and Tony Holden and all these other guys. It's gonna be great.
Rob just got fired.
Rob's got fired. I thought we locked that door. I swear. Yeah, fired.
You know, I got
Tony, you fire people a lot, right?
Not anymore. He left the casino.
I've left that world. But yes, I used to.
I don't know if it'd be like to be worked or fired from you. Yeah. I think it'd kind of scare me a little bit.
It sucks.
It sucks.
Yeah, it sucks.
The third time I came to visit him, he was at the casino, and he's like, just come by. We'll go to dinner. And he got me a room and everything.
Yeah.
And we go in steak dinner.
But you had a steak dinner?
Go ahead. He has to go back and forth and commute from his place here to Miami like all the time.
Yeah.
So he had this Sprinter van that was just decked out with neon and a bar, and it was quite plush, actually.
It was a long ride. It was an hour drive. I had to do something.
I'm sure my crew would locate. We had a Sprinter van with the bar and some plush sheets.
And that's when he took me to the Mickey Mantle boyhood home that he owned at the time.
Yeah,
that is great.
You know, one thing about this man talk about Lathan with Evil Knievel that really impressed me is I was trying to track down all this memorabilia.
Yeah.
And Evil didn't even know where it was. When Evil was alive, Evil wanted me to find the Wembley bike and this and that and help him. And I don't know how he did it, but he tracked down everything.
That's everything. The reason I did it, actually. The fascinating thing for me was the historical significance.
It's the hunt.
I everything that I found was from studying photographs and stories, and then it was a chain reaction. So you find one thing, and I heard about this, because half of it, I would say half of his memorabilia was hidden, because some of it was dealt with in a shady way,
right?
Or he gave it to somebody who's passed on, and it was in their closet, and their kids sold it to somebody. I mean, that's the Wembley helmet. It was passed around from Frank Gifford's son.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
He gave it to Frank. He threw it to him after he got off the plane. Here you go. And then it was on his shelf for, you know, 25 years. And then his son got it and sold it for $14,000 to somebody.
Oh.
And then that guy sold it for $25,000.
And what year was that?
That was at least, it had probably 20 years ago. But it floated around for a while. Oh, what was that?
The chili race is starting.
The chili bowl race, I think.
I don't know.
Some rant rather.
But that was the whole thrill for me was the finding and the hunting of the stuff, because it was just fascinating. It was archaeology. It was evil archaeology.
I think that's the best part of wanting it, is finding and hunting. Yeah. And once you get it, you're like, okay, let's go to the next piece.
That's the thing. I never wanted it to say it was mine. I got it and I put it away and I went for the next thing, because the whole goal at the end of the day was to build a permanent brick and mortar museum for him.
And you've done, I mean, even watching documentaries of what you've done, even with the Mack truck with Rob and everything that you've done, it's just so great. Your passion is, I mean, that's why even my small collection that I brought part of today with the toys, it's just great seeing people look at it and hearing the stories. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, the toys are just that's what's ingrained in everybody's the toy.
If you're a 70s child, you it's how many you times, don't get it.
How many
yeah.
times have you seen that? Well, I had the thing.
Everybody, all day long. I had the thing.
I crank.
Or the ripcord. Everybody's doing the ripcord thing, you know.
All these urgent cares came after their time. If they had urgent cares, every time you went to emergency room, there's a kid that tried to play Evel Knievel with the broken arm.
Oh,
yeah.
Jumping over his friends.
Yeah.
Jumping on your friends, jumping on somebody's ribs or smashing somebody's arm.
All of us did that.
Yeah.
I remember I did it one time and the front wheel fell off. There. And that was
it a Schwinn?
Yeah, it was a Schwinn.
It was your Schwinn. We talked about the pedals. Lathan was talking about how when they came out the freestyle bike, and we didn't know you had to pedal backwards and do everything on there. And then as far as doing stuff, and then the cleats out around those damn foot pegs, man.
Oh,
they rip your shins right off.
Yeah, and those were stitches.
That's what I did riding. I rode BMX for a while, and I had a full rake by the pedal.
Yeah.
It just grated my skin off my shin. Yeah. I was like, I'm not doing that anymore. I'll get a skateboard.
And I mean, a lot of people don't know your history also is because, I mean, you started out doing BMXing and skateboarding. That's where you started.
Yeah. When I started skateboarding, that was it for me. I was like, no coach.
That's it.
Pure personal freedom on wheels.
You went to national tours and everything,
didn't you? Well, yeah, we were early on. We did like the first X Games exhibitions where they were small.
Yeah.
And then
before anybody really knew it, well, Tony Hawk and all the guys, right?
Yeah. And then the industry took a really big nosedive. And then I went to college for a while. And then I was really into cinema. But now it's just like skateboarding exploded after that. Now everybody's good. It's like, then there was 30 guys. Now there's 5 million guys.
Oh my gosh. And it's just like anything that you did, Tony, or anything you did, Lathan, like your passion running that you do is so extreme. Like even with your skateboarding and what you did before. And now going into your filming documentaries are amazing.
Well, I always call myself a victim of my own passions. And it's a play off the, you're a fashion victim.
Yeah,
it's a passion victim.
It's true. Yeah, I mean,
you can't help it. I have to be doing something that's pretty difficult all the time to get the high.
To get the high of it. I mean,
since I don't use drugs because they'll blow you all to hell.
Yes. And then next thing you know, you're running around town with like a midget in your backseat or something. You know,
where is my cook?
I don't know where he is at. He's got to be around here somewhere.
He's taking a nap somewhere.
He's taking a nap somewhere. So now we're in the great. So. When did you first meet Evel?
I believe it was 1997. Being a boxing promoter, Bob Arum and Top Rank. It was Bob Arum and Don King.
Okay.
So,
gotcha.
What was Don really like?
I still talk to Don. He's still doing shows.
Do you care?
Are you serious?
Don's a lot of fun.
Oh man, I can't.
I'd love to hang with Don King.
Don's a lot of fun, and you know, forget all that negative. He's really. He was actually. I never had a problem with Don. I did several shows with him. Everybody says he's you have a good contract. I'd rather work with him than anybody.
Yeah, I'd love to sit and talk to the guy for anything.
Oh,
he's awesome. I mean, that's all obviously when I was growing up, I was I was born in the 70s. So going through and then when Tyson, all we knew was Don King.
Yeah.
We were looking for Don King when we were looking for Tyson when he came out with that hair. You know, he's all shaking his hand. I mean, that guy's great.
So I met Evel at a boxing match.
Okay.
Bob Arum in Top Rank, who did the Snake River Canyon jump.
Okay.
And by a boxing promoter.
Really?
So, we both knew Bob, and we're sitting in Bob's seats, and I'm sitting next to Evel, and he was Elvis out back then. And,
gold rim glasses with the pink lenses.
Sugar Ray Leonard and Hector Macho Camacho at the MGM Grands.
Wow. I'd love to sit there, man.
And we just sat there and talked and had a grand time. And then
Fine's badass, by the way. I'm sorry, in my book, that's just so cool.
So then I brought him to the casino, and we talked every day. Every day he'd call me. He turned out to be kind of, I think, lonely at the end. But, boy, he told me everything. I didn't pull the chute. I just, he'd go on ramps and races.
Did he call you in the middle of the night like everybody else, like 2 in the morning?
A couple of times, and I told him to stop.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's like Evel. My wife.
He would call people most of the time like 2 to 5 in the morning.
On the doc that you guys did there, I saw that he would call people randomly just to, talk at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's true.
He would call me, hey, I'm watching American Idol. Did you see that hologram on Elvis, or just random stuff all the time?
Really? Because in the end, he was living by himself?
No,
it's still Crystal.
It was still Crystal.
But he was in Clearwater when he was in a lot of ailing. He was ailing.
Okay.
He was in a big, big leather, like, lazy boy most of the time when he was.
Really?
Yeah, when he had his transplant and other things.
Okay, gotcha.
He was in a lot of pain later on.
He looked like the last the last few things that you had of, you know, on the docks and stuff, you could see when he was getting up and doing.
You break your pelvis more than twice. That's not good.
Evil was the kindest, most bitter man I've ever met in my life.
Yeah,
that's a nice duality.
Yeah. That's a good way to roll that up, man. Yeah, good way to roll it up.
And angry.
Get angry and angry. Yeah.
Yeah, he would get Crystal's story is incredible. See, he could deal with the biggest nightmare of a situation and not get mad at all. And then the smallest little thing, he would just blow up.
Really?
Yeah, and I think I told
her, that's
crazy. I think he was one of the first people to get kind of what's going on in football with the head injuries.
Yeah.
Because Kelly Knievel told me even after Caesars, he was not like that before Caesars. After Caesars, his temper was different. Yeah. Now he had smashed his head onto the cement.
And Caesars was 68, right?
Yeah. He said he was different after that.
Yeah.
So I think the trauma from his head injury was part of that.
And that's crazy. I mean, it happened in 68, and then he really didn't get mainstream until 69 and 70. That's when it all started going crazy.
Well, and the interesting thing that people don't really realize, after Caesars, from when he started riding the American Eagle bike, it was, you know, it was almost 600 pounds, and it was all he could get. He got sponsorship from them, but he crashed half the time on that bike. He had staph infection. He was always busted during that. It was the worst period of his life.
I was going to say, because I think it was in your doc that you said when he actually said that when he got the next transition, he was sick from then on forward from everything, the transition all the way through to 70.
Yeah, when he switched to Harley, he did pretty well on that bike. But that American Eagle just destroyed his body.
Breaking your back, just landing. It's like a full dress Road King Harley trying to do
that.
Bike is ridiculously heavy. I just pushed it off a curb and I was frightened.
Yeah, you think about that. These guys don't understand. I mean, obviously, Harley's, I mean, all the demographics, all these motorcycles are going to change over the years. But you think about the weight of that bike, what it was in the 60s, it's like a bagger now.
Well,
it's like a street glide.
It wasn't only the weight, it was the suspension.
It was nothing.
There was nothing. Your back, when you hit, just compressed. I mean, it just fractured your back to pieces.
That's why Robbie had the titanium in his back.
He had suspension.
Even with his bike.
Yeah.
Anything ramp to ramp,
it's unreal.
Old school like that, your vertebra is just going to get compressed.
Well, I mean, it goes back to everybody that comes on the show and we're talking about. They're like, what's the biggest thing? I'm like, dude, he was our first superhero. He was our first real-life superhero, and he kept getting up over and over again. So we actually, you know, we thought, you know, we got a picture somewhere around here. I think you were looking at it before. It's a picture of Evil and a half. It's like a Terminator look, you know? And I said, to us, those kids, that's how we thought of him. Like, we didn't think anything could kill this guy.
Well, the thing about Evil that I noticed by having boxers and professional athletes, there's the world champions, the best of the best, have the same character as Evil. And what that is, for the boxer, you got to kill me to beat me. I don't care. And it's they absolutely have no fear. Evil had, it's like something missing or not right there, where you have no fear. And Evil possessed that.
The only time he was actually scared, and you could tell, and he admitted it, was Snake River. He thought he was definitely going to die.
Yeah, that's when that first came up. But you're right. I mean, he took that, he capitalized, and he owned that. Like, there was no one, and you saw that in his eyes. Like, he had nothing. Every jump, he would get up, and, like, they'd pick him all up, and he'd be broken or skull broken. And he's like, get me to the camera. There was no stretchers. Like, we didn't think this. It was unbelievable. This guy.
I'm sure he got nervous, and he was scared to a point, but he had the attitude, screw it, I guess I'll die.
That's what the wild turkey was for.
Yeah, basically, just, you know what, guess what, I got to do a jump. I might die today. I might be home for supper. I don't know.
Something interesting Gary Davis told me, too, and in the movie, but he just always said, because he was one of the best, but he said if he crashed once as bad as Evil did, he would have walked away.
Yeah,
and he said that's what he had, because all those other guys, they're all in wheelchairs, most of them. I mean, Bob Gill and those guys, they took a beating.
They're all disabled nowadays, man.
Evil got really lucky too with as many breaks as he had in his neck and his back,
Do it again and again.
He was never paralyzed.
And all that stress on your back to do it again.
That's the only way to stop
again.
Him is being paralyzed.
Yeah. And I mean, he goes back through. I mean, most people, you get these injuries, they're in traction, they're in therapy for so long. And he's like, no, I got a jump coming up in 30 days, 60 days, whatever. I'm like, how? I mean, it's unbelievable.
What am I supposed to do? Give them their money back?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, that's the way the guy was. And I mean, I guess the other thing I would like to touch base on is, like, what do you think as far as you being a boxing promoter? How he self-promoted himself. I mean, I always look at things always. I mean, but he was such an amazing businessman to me. It just blows me away how he self-promoted himself to get everything there.
He was a master promoter, self-promotion.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was probably the most difficult man to work with,
I hear that a lot.
He wanted it his way. Now, the best promotion was Snake River Canyon. because he got with Bob Arum, who was the world's top boxing promoter, okay, with Evil. And yeah, they did such a great job, but they didn't like each other because their egos. I mean, you know, Bob told me, at all the world champion fighters I ever worked with, Evil was the most difficult man I've ever worked with. And I get it. You know, a guy like Evil doesn't care. It's my way.
I think we got some races cooking.
We got some races cooking in the background here. We to,
no, I'm yeah, glad they should have put the booth on the opposite end.
I know. It's like, I love it. It's the main display. What, oh, how are we looking at it? Should we cut it out? All right. Yeah.
It's just background.
Yeah.
Noise, man.
Yeah. It's a background noise. Yeah. Well, we'll have to maybe catch up at the hotel or do something. Yeah. It's a little bit, right? Maybe we can do this on there too. So we'll do it on there. So, all right. Well, we're going to cut out of here because we've got the noises and races starting up, but we got a lot more to catch up with you on. You know, I'm going to be back on the show. So, everybody, all right.
Monster truck jam is
obviously my back seat or something's going on here. We're supposed to be at a classic car show, but something's going on back there. So, all right, well, we'll catch up with both you guys in a little while, and we're going to carry on from the promotional standpoint when we get that back onto it.
You got it, brother.
All right, thanks a lot for having me on it. Thanks. All right,
thanks, bye. John.